Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And we're up to episode 28 of Mind Food Radio. Gosh, we've done quite a lot of interviews when you look back
we
over
sure
them.
Sure have. It just feels like the other day we started
I
the
know.
Show.
And on today's program, we've got Dr. Sue Shepherd joining us talking
That's
about
right.
celiac.
And I know you have that terrible disease of hypochondria. It's a shocking ailment.
But we should do a segment on that.
Do you think you're going to suffer this one as well?
Oh, well, my sister's got it, so it's pretty much assured that I probably have, hey?
It's heading your way for sure. We're also going to talk to a violinist. I don't think I've ever interviewed a violinist.
No.
Sally Cooper. Do you think she's any relation to Alice?
Well, who knows? We'll find out when we chat to her. Blake Worrell Thompson's going to join us as well.
That's right. He's the ambassador, or one of the ambassadors, for Oz Sober. Do you get it? October Sober.
It's all happening. And of course, what's happening on Mind Food at the minute? There's something new.
Well, of course, the big Mind Food app, which we've just launched, which we're very proud of, and latest edition's just gone on sale, so it's all go.
As we get into another episode of Mind Food Radio, thanks for joining us today.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Now, I didn't know what celiac meant until one day my sister came home and said, I am celiac, which means she can't have gluten
That's
in her
right.
diet.
Now, celiac disease is where the immune system reacts abnormally to gluten.
Yep.
So, for example, which is a protein, as you know, which is found in wheat, rye, barley and oats.
Mm.
So I'd like to welcome to the show today Dr. Sue Shepherd. Hi, Sue.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
Very good. Now, you're a lecturer at Monash University in the Department of Medicine and a senior researcher. You specialise in this, and I know you've written a couple of books, Gluten-Free Cooking.
Uh-huh.
Like Ben has sort of said, there seems to have been an explosion of gluten-free and much more knowledge around it. Is it that it's always been there, but that we're just now much more aware of it?
It's actually both. It has always been there, but we're really poor at diagnosing it in the past. We just had this perception that you had to be really sick and wasted and have, you know, chronically bad diarrhea.
Mm.
So the profile of the people we thought had it was quite different to the reality. People can look everyday, ordinary people. A lot of people diagnosed are overweight. So we now know to broaden our vision in who to look at as being potentially celiac. So we're better at diagnosing because there's been increased awareness. But the other actual reality is that celiac disease has increased fourfold over the last 50 years.
Wow.
So we do have, like most autoimmune conditions, there's a true increase in prevalence in the actual community.
Because it's something like 1 in 100 Australians, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really common, exactly. And the sad stat is, though, that as much as that, you know, 1% of our population who have it, which, mind you, is twice as common as type 1 diabetes, and, you know, so many people know more about type 1 diabetes, and many hadn't heard of celiac disease, like you hadn't heard of it until your sister, and yet it's very, very common, 1% of the population, but for every one person who's diagnosed, there are 4 people around, walking around, who are yet to be diagnosed. So that 1 in 100 is what the true reality is, but only 1/5 of that are actually diagnosed. So we need to do a better job of, you know, thinking about ourselves or our friends or family, people who are abnormally tired, people who are excessively windy and bloated. Now, it's quite normal to pass wind. As human beings, we're meant to, or we'll blow up. But it's when there's lots of wind and lots of bloating. You know, you wake up, you start the morning with a flat tummy, and through the day you're quite bloated. These are the sorts of people that need to start thinking, you know what, it's not normal if it's happening all the time.
And where do you go? So you'd need to go to your doctor and be tested for it? Is that what happens?
Yep, you actually took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say,
sorry.
And that's important. People don't diagnose. No, it's a really, really important message that everyone needs to know, and that's don't self-diagnose. As much as the gluten-free foods are in the supermarket, and, you know, we can purchase them, and it's now easier than it's ever been to follow a gluten-free diet, and as I said, choose the foods. You can't start a gluten-free diet until you've had your proper diagnosis.
Yeah.
And that means going to the doctor, chatting with the doctor about your symptoms. The GP might organise blood tests. It should specifically look for these antibodies for celiac disease. It will also potentially involve a gene test, which can be done via a blood test. And almost definitely, if you're looking like a strong candidate, a referral to a gastroenterologist who will do what's called the gold standard diagnosis, and that's where a camera on a tube is passed down the esophagus into the stomach and round into the first part of the small intestine, where very small samples are taken, biopsies, and they're looked under the microscope, and that's where we see the damage of celiac disease. So So we're blessed with celiac disease having a definite treatment. But the gluten-free diet is really complex, and it's highly recommended that anyone diagnosed is taught all of the bits and bobs, the complexities of the gluten-free diet by a dietitian, an accredited practicing dietitian who specialises in celiac disease.
Dr. Sue Shepherd, thank you very much for being on today's show.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio right around Australia with Ben Starr and Michael McHugh. Well, we're lucky to have a wonderful lady on the line by the name of Claire Bowditch. And Claire is a fabulous, fabulous Australian musician, writer, coach, commentator, actress. She's got it all. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Claire, can you take us back to the very early days before it all began and tell us your story?
Yeah, gosh. Look, I've always loved making music. I started, you know, recording songs when I was three. My mother was just one of those clever mums who knew how to occupy a youngest child by giving me a tape recorder and taught me how to press play and record at the same time. I just continued doing that. I started playing in bands at 16, but I didn't really decide to take my music career seriously until I was... Oh, look, I first started recording at 22, but I started doing Claire Bowditch stuff under my own name when I was about 26, and it was really due to meeting an amazing guy called Marty Brown, who became my producer and my drummer, and then guess what, my husband.
Yes. in that order. In terms of what we see in the world that we're reflecting today, was modern-day addiction written for that very purpose?
Absolutely. I think we live in the most, you know, we live in the most addictive society in the history of humankind. So, look, we've always been attracted to things that sparkle, but modern-day addiction was really my reaction and my set of songs about the fact that we live in the times that we do and that we all fall for it, you know, the television, sugar on the cake, petrol in the car, lots of makeup, slap it on thick, just like we're 16. But then the question, if we're all princesses, who's going to be the queen? So that was my journey through modern-day addiction.
In terms of addiction, do you find work is an addiction for you? Do you enjoy work?
Work can be an addiction, absolutely. And one of the reasons I wrote this album, The Winter I Chose Happiness, is because I found myself and my family were travelling overseas each year and pursuing an international career. And all the signs were great. It occurred to me at a certain point, though, that if we were really going to make a go of it, we had to commit to touring internationally for the next 5 years. And my decision, the reason I actually ended up doing Offspring, ironically, was that we wanted to come home and live a life that was, had a lot more life in it and a little less work in it.
Yes.
So, and work closer to home. So Offspring is filmed in my hometown in Melbourne, and it was something exciting and new to try. So I think work can absolutely, and the way we define ourselves, can absolutely be tied up with our work, but it doesn't need to be that way. After this, I need to have some quiet time, you know, just basic time in my garden and doing things that would traditionally be considered boring. I actually find them exciting and lovely. So part of trying to bring this notion of balance into our lives this year, we had our first holiday in a long, long time. We went to Byron Bay for 2 weeks and we did not work. That's a miracle for a family who constantly tour, you know. Yeah. Suddenly occurred to us, dear God, we never take time off.
So what do you do at night to switch off? What's one of the things that you do? You don't listen to one of your songs, do you?
No, I don't, but I do sometimes play guitar. I do sometimes flop in a heap with my favourite new chai, Kama Sutra chai.
There's a
free plug there for them. I listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, I really love listening to wise people talk. I sometimes fall asleep listening to my favourite people, you know, telling stories from their life.
Well, Claire Bowditch, look, I want to thank you for coming on the program and thank you for entertaining us with your wonderful creativity.
Thanks a million, but thanks for having me, Mind Food. Thank you.
You were born to be some other girl. You're gonna be your own kind of girl.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
It's Mind Food Radio, and now into the month of October, not too far away, but the healthy benefits of cutting out alcohol in the segment.
That's right, and it's all about being sober in October for our kids. I was Oxober. How's that? Go. I got it. Oxober. Do you get it?
Oxober. Say that three times.
Exactly. Oxober, Oxober, Oxober. It's a fundraising initiative that encourages people to give up alcohol for the month of October, and I'd like to welcome to the show one of their ambassadors, Blake Worrell-Thompson. Hi, Blake.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Well, it supports life education, doesn't it?
It is. It's life education, which is a program targeted at the younger group for all things from, you know, your health, drugs and alcohol, and educating them as best we can.
And I guess it's all about making, you know, healthy life choices, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously with some of our problems with obesity and things like that, it's really important to get off on a good foot, you know, with the younger kids and educate them from early years so they can get on top of their health from, you know, from an early age.
Now, is this a new thing that, you know, the whole idea in terms of giving up alcohol for October?
It is relatively new. I think it's only a couple of years old. Obviously, there's another one called Dry July, which it works quite well, and it's a similar concept in terms of obviously going alcohol-free for the month of October. So it is very new, only a couple of years old, but growing in popularity very quickly.
When it comes to looking after our health and things like that, what should we be doing?
Exercise is the one that kind of everyone knows. But it really is a balancing act, you know, from your exercise to your sleep. Living in Sydney, stress is one that people really need to manage better than they do. And obviously nutrition plays a massive role as well. So it's really important, you know, like I said, that the kids are getting taught these habits early on. So hopefully they implement them into life and carry them through with them.
For kids and parents, you know, it's hard as parents, and it's not an excuse, but, you know, you're multitasking, doing, running around, doing lots of things. It's easy sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, just to collapse on that sofa.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, life is so quick these days that you are trying to do the best with the time you've got, you know, and also make it as convenient as possible. So that's why, you know, there's 1,001 takeaway shops and, you know, plenty of pre-made food. So it really is, you know, about organising your life as best you can. But, you know, in saying that, you can always find a little bit of time to, you know, concentrate on your health. And, you know, there's 1,001 excuses that people use. And, you know, I've heard every single one of them possible. But it is really just bringing your health, you know, to the forefront of your mind a little bit more because, you know, without your health, you haven't got much left.
When it comes to our health, though, I mean, you did mention that, you know, we're living in Sydney and it's a very stressful place. You know, yeah. I hear more and more people saying I need to get out of the city.
Yeah, mate. Oh, there's been numerous times. I was just up at Byron Bay about a month ago and it's just a completely different, you know, lifestyle up there. And, you know, everything from your health to your relationships and, you know, your sleep and you know, all areas of your health are affected by stress. And, you know, with things like drinking and, you know, drugs and all these things that we're talking about with Healthy Harold, a lot of them are brought on by stress. And if people just, you know, were able to control the stress, you'd find a completely different person, a completely different lifestyle that they'd live.
Now, the thing is, you can sign up as an individual or you can sign up as a team. So where do you go to sign up?
You go to www.oxsober, so it's ocsober.com.au, and there's plenty of easy little gadgets on the homepage to help you sign up. And, you know, it really is one of those things that works really well with friends. You know, I know as I'm not much of a drinker these days and a lot of my mates still are, you don't want to feel isolated at all. So to be able to do it with your friends, you know, and strength in numbers makes it a lot easier. So if you can pull, you know, one or two friends in and get them to sign up as well, will make life a lot easier.
For those listeners who are listening, get in behind it. It's a great cause. And, you know, start early. Get those kids learning all about it and healthy habits.
Thank you, Blake.
Thanks very much, guys.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio. Of course, for any details on today's program, jump on to mindfood.com. Nice to be at your place today, whatever you're up to. We've got an Olympian on the air with us now. He's just come back from the 2012 Olympics, and of course, he's now going to embark on a five-week horse riding, tour, travelling over 1,100 kilometres. And you may have seen this wonderful guy, Australian pentathlete, Commerce Master student, Ed Fernan, on television a few weeks ago. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
What was it like at the Olympics, I have to ask you?
Yeah, the Olympics was an amazing experience. I guess everyone has the dream, or in some part of themselves, to go and compete at the Olympic Games. I very much had that dream when I took up the sport, to go to the Olympics, and to be over there in such an amazing atmosphere, meeting so many amazing people. It was just a surreal experience for that 2 weeks.
And the relationship too you have to have with the sport and the science and the art of it, hey?
Yeah, it's pretty full on, doing 5 sports and competing in 5 sports in one day. It's definitely a challenge.
Which is your favourite?
Definitely the horse riding. I've always had horses since I was young, and that's probably one of the reasons I got into the sport of modern pentathlon. And for people who don't know, modern pentathlons consists of swimming, fencing, show jumping, running and shooting all in the one day. And definitely the riding, which is takes place on a random horse. Actually, we don't get to take our own horse.
Oh, really?
We only get 20 minutes to ride the horse before we undertake the show jumping course.
Wow.
And there's definitely a lot of trust, but yeah, you got to make some pretty big assumptions and just go out there and do the best you can with the limited time that you've got.
Now, switching your focus from all this hype that you've had overseas, coming back home here, from your elite sport training, you're now going to help those suffering from depression and bipolar disorder, and the charity ride will raise funds for the Black Dog Institute, which provides some really cool, highly effective programs for people living with this illness. Why are you doing this?
My mum had depression for a long time, and I saw the impact that had on her, and I thought now I could use my kind of profile to be able to make a difference and hopefully raise some funds to the Black Dog Institute.
What was it like growing up with someone with depression from your perspective? And what advice could you give to people that may be in this situation at the minute?
My mum was so strong and so courageous. A lot of the time you didn't really realise what she was going through because she always tried to protect us from it. But there were particular times when it was very, very clear, and it was such a debilitating illness and really had a huge impact on her. So a lot of the times I really wasn't aware of the illness, but I guess communication is just vital, being able to talk to the person and saying, you know, there is help available. For Mum, she was able to get help, which was fantastic, and just making it very clear, the Black Dog Institute has some amazing programs, and you can jump on their website and have a look. That's at Black Dog Institute. That's obviously an amazing program. What they're doing there is sensational.
Now, you're going to retrace the footsteps of Archer, the first horse to win the Melbourne Cup. Tell us all about this. This is a really fabulous journey you're going to go on.
Yeah, well, the main reason I thought to do an endurance event, because that's what it's like for a lot of people who live with depression. It really is an endurance event, doing day by day. So I thought the parallels there between people living with depression and sort of an endurance event was sort of, I guess, very appropriate. I have that real interest in horses and that love for horses. And I was, I guess, a bit encapsulated by the idea that Archer walked to Melbourne to win the first Melbourne Cup. I think there's speculation whether that happened, but either way, it's a great legend and a great story, which is going down into Australian folklore.
Well, Ed Fernan, thank you very much for coming on the program today, and thanks again for being the inspiration of our nation and helping all these people with mental depression and mental illnesses and things like that. You're doing a great job, and congratulations again on all your success overseas.
Thanks very much. It's been my pleasure.
It's Mind Food Radio with Ben and Michael. Now, Michael, you're very good with the violin.
Yeah, look, can I tell you, my son actually did it for a couple of years, and I think he was actually asked to leave.
My mother wanted to play it, but her arms are too short.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Anyone who plays it seems incredibly intelligent.
And then I had a great-grandfather, that used to play a violin by ear.
Wow.
Work that out.
How would you be able to hold the violin with your other ear?
Well, this lady that's about to join us, I tell you what, she's performed with a score of respected stars that we all know, Guy Sebastian, Ronan Keating, Michael Bublé, Harry Connick Jr. She hasn't performed with us yet.
Well, she's very wise.
How are you, Sally?
Sally Cooper, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
You're in shock. I know it's hard.
Now, no relation to Alice.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so the violin's been in my life since I was 7. But it may as well have been in my life since I was born. I don't remember a time when I didn't play.
I mean, you're a prodigy. I mean, when you read your bio here, you start, learning at 8, you're in the conservatorium, and then by 14 you're playing with orchestras. Were you determined?
Well, yeah, I started the conservatorium when I was 8, and I started performing solo concertos with orchestra when I was 9.
Wow.
I mean, I look at those facts now as an adult looking back, and I mean, it boggles my mind. You can't explain something like that except, you know, except to say that that's a gift. And I'm so grateful every day that I was born with a gift like that.
With all this stuff that you do, I mean, you work for the X Factor, Dancing with the Stars, Australia's Got Talent. I mean, you must have nearly dropped your violin when you were working with Michael Bublé and Ronan Keating. These superstars, huh? What's it like working with those guys?
Didn't drop my violin, but...
But what's it like working with these guys? That must be just so much fun.
It's pretty phenomenal. They are a load of fun and they're just so talented. You know, these guys and the voices that come out of their mouths. The thing that I think is just so amazing is how well the violin works with the human voice. And I guess that's what's allowed me to then, you know, work with all of these amazing singers and artists.
Are you like one of those artists that when you go into the studio to record an album that you just go to a different planet when you're doing these wonderful things with your violin?
Yes. That's exactly it, yeah. You've explained that very well.
I think she's just drifted off then, thinking about it.
And I know that everyone tells me that when they watch me play, that it looks like I'm going to a different place. But I guess it's just, it's so all-encompassing, the sound and the feeling, and I can feel like it's a story every time, and I feel it coming straight from the depths of my soul. And there is nothing else in the moments that I'm playing except that sound and that emotion. That's what people are seeing when they say that an artist goes to a different place.
So you've got a debut album coming out. Tell us about that.
Okay, so this is very exciting. This is my first album. My favourite song, my favourite pieces to play, it's like an eclectic mix of my life, of my favourite music put together, and so half of them I've kept true to the original arrangement, and half of them I've done, along with my producer, new arrangements to suit the violin better. And there's a few tracks on it that I've been playing all my life that are more from the classical realm. And then I've got a couple of my favourite rock ballads, like Nothing Else Matters, Metallica, one of the Doors tracks. I've got a Pink Floyd track on there, one of my favourite Beatles tracks, which I've put a bit of a R&B soul touch on, which is a genre of music that is one of my favourites. It's been such an exciting process putting this all together.
Sally Cooper, thank you for joining us on today's
program. Great to have you on the show, Sally.
Thanks, fantastic. Guys.
And
thanks
what's the
so
brand
much.
New album? What's the album called?
The album's called Golden.
Golden. So look out for that, of course. Fantastic. The Beatles and Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin. You know Led Zeppelin, don't you?
I sure do.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Now, the Australian Sandwich Association, the ASA, I didn't even know this existed, today announced that Laura Neville, the head chef of the Caffeinatics Group, has been selected as the best sandwich maker in the country following her victory in the Great Australian Sandwich Competition at this year's Fine Food Show in Melbourne. And we have her on the line. How are you, Lauren?
Very well, thank you.
What makes the best sandwich?
I think it's all about flavour, really. Just about combinations of flavours, putting things together in the right way. It's about structure and flavour.
So tell me, are those little sandwiches that we used to see on Seinfeld where they'd go into coffee shops, is anything inspired from that?
I think everything has its roots, obviously, but I think we've progressed quite far from the old 80s and the 70s.
To win this award, what special qualities did you have to have?
Well, we went through a process of elimination. We did there was a northern final, which was the northern states of Australia, and then there was a southern final, which was the southern states. The northern was obviously held in Brisbane, southern was held in Sydney a couple of weeks ago. I won the southern, which was fun. it was a good comp. I was a little bit surprised, but I was very, very pleased to have won that. I came away with a nice trophy. And then there's the big national final, which is in Melbourne.
Yes.
Just on Tuesday. Great competition. Huge volume of people at the show, which was great to see. It's always nice to get a bit more awareness out there of what we do.
Now tell me, okay, mums, dads, kids, they're all listening to us around Australia at the minute. We've got the sandwich queen on the air. Yeah, now, what can we whip up with our toasties for this weekend?
Look, I think, you know, I'm a massive believer in utilising what you've got. I don't think you need to go shopping every day to have the best of everything. I think it's a great thing to utilise leftovers and to use things up and just experiment with flavours and textures. And I think one of the key ingredients to a great sandwich is textures.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about what you're putting in there. You know, if you've got toast, you need something a little bit wet to be palatable for mm-hmm. the sandwich. So you need a bit of mayo, some kind of lubrication like a mayonnaise or a butter or mustard. Even avocado is fantastic if you're being cautious of your weight. So.
And what do we put with that? What else can we put?
Oh, so for example, you could go like nice toasty, you could have a little bit of mayo or avocado. It's always important to layer your flavours as well. So, say for example, if you're having a ham, perhaps you might put your condiment close to your ham so that you get the full effect of those flavours balancing each other out, like
mm-hmm.
ham with mustard, cheese with mayonnaise, lettuce, tomatoes. You kind of need a bit of salt on those things because that helps to draw the flavours out. You just experiment, really. Just have a bit of fun with it. And just even if you don't think it's going to go, give it a go. And if it works, it's great. You've found something new to eat. And if it doesn't work, well, you know what doesn't work.
Now, tell me, if we get the old Breville out, and I can just see people doing this now, they're going, we've got to find our sandwich maker. When they get it out tonight, how long do you have to cook it for to get that perfect toasted sandwich?
It depends, obviously, how hot your Breville can get. I would say on an average, probably takes, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. If you want it nice and crispy, it may be a little bit longer. But, I reckon 3 to 5 minutes is probably about right.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, I tell you what, I am going to do that tonight. I'm not a very good cook, but tonight could be the toasty night at my place.
Yeah.
Laura, thank you very much for joining us today.
That's okay.
And
very happy.
Congratulations again on your wonderful award there. I think it's just so cool, the Australasian Sandwich Association. And Laura Neville, of course, the head chef of the Caffeinetics Group, she won the best sandwich maker in the country. This is Mind Food Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
It's Mind Food Radio. Now, Michael, you're very good in the kitchen, but have you ever made a crock and botch?
No. Well, our next guest, we've just pulled him away from his kitchen where he's making a crock and botch. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Now, this is Mark Stone from Stone's Patisserie. Now, you're going to be part of the Food for Thought here in Sydney, aren't you, in October?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, that's for the Stroke Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've only just sort of recently supported the Stroke Foundation, mainly because a very good friend of mine, Michael Moore,
yes,
had a little bit of an incident himself, and I've known him for many years, way back from when we worked together in London. So we have some very close ties. So it sort of made me realise when he had his issue that it's all around us. And even though I might be the person that some people may regard as the devil that produces all those yummy treats that you don't want to eat because it's going to give you a stroke, it's made me a lot more aware of what I do produce and how I produce it. So it's not to the detriment of the quality of my products, but definitely makes us more aware of what we're making and how much butter and how much sugar and that goes into everything. But
do you think as humans we have too much sugar?
Probably, but I mean, I get to see how much goes into everything that we eat, and you'd be surprised, how much does go into sort of general food consumption, and that's why I think it's important for people to read the nutritional labels when they go shopping, to definitely be aware of the sugar component of all the products that they buy.
Now, the night itself is actually at Daltone House at Jones Bay Wharf. It's from 6:30 to 7 at kickoff. It's Thursday the 4th of October, and there's a range of chefs. I know Michael Moore is actually the MC for the night.
Yeah, but it'd be quite funny.
Yeah, I can imagine. We've had him on the show, actually. He told us all about his stroke and you know, particularly, actually, it was interesting from his family point of view and his kids. But it's a degustation menu. Tell us about some of the chefs that are going to be involved in the night.
I do know one of the others, Colin Fasnich. He was my best man at my wedding. So
he's had four in hand, isn't he?
Yes, that's correct. He's a character. So there's certainly going to be some fun and games, because I understand that we're doing a little bit on stage as well.
That's right. We've got Nicholas Hill from Duke Bistro. We've got Jeremy Brentney from the Devonshire. You know, we've got a really good lineup. Anthony Telford from the Public Dining Room. It's a great cause and it'll be a great night.
Yes, it'll be a lot of fun and games and very entertaining, because Michael's very good at bringing people together.
Yeah. Do you know what you're going to make at the stage, or is that why you're making the Cookenbush? You're doing a bit of trial.
Cookenbush covered in sugar. Yeah. I'm trying to design something that, obviously, because the side effects of stroke is taste and smell, the loss of your sensations. So I want to try and look at something a lot stronger in flavour, but also a bit lighter on the sugar and cream.
Okay.
So, it's going to be very interesting. I pull on my training in Paris and London, and definitely pull out the stops. And because I'm not one for these, you know, flashy things. That other people do. That's just a flash in the pan. I'm very classical in the way I approach things, and methodical. Giving something spectacular that's full of substance.
Yeah. What do you like about your job, Mark?
I love everything about my job. That's why I do 100 hours a week.
I love cake mixture. I'd like to come and just work in that job.
I've got about 20 kilos of cake mixture you can just dive into.
Yeah, I'd love that job.
Well, Mark, thanks for coming on the show today.
No problem. Pleasure.
And for those who want to go to support the Stroke Foundation, I'll just give you those details again. It's Thursday, the 4th of October. It's a 6:30 kickoff at Dalton House at Jones Bay Wharf. Dress code is cocktail, so get your frock out, Ben.
Yes. or tails.
For tickets and for more information, go to mindfood.com.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
And welcome back. Well, we're trying to get fit for summer, and we've got Sean Cadillo joining us on the line at the minute. New You Total Health. How are you, Sean?
I'm fabulous, thanks. How are you?
You would be fabulous. You're in the business of looking fabulous.
Yeah, look, getting fit and healthy, there's nothing better than that, getting out there and improving your health and fitness and enjoying the outdoors. We live in a beautiful country to be doing it, so there's really no excuses, is there?
There really is no excuse. But look, if you're looking around and winter's coming to an end, you might be looking at yourself in the mirror going, oh my goodness, I need to do something about this body. So what can we do to start to get fit for summer?
The simplest thing we can do is probably start thinking about drinking lots more water. Not enough people drink water, and it's fabulous for keeping us well hydrated, giving us lots of energy, and also helping us lose weight if we need to. So that would be step one.
Mm-hmm.
Step two would be to focus on lots of incidental exercise. Treat movement, any additional movement we can do, as an opportunity rather than a burden. So taking the stairs instead of the lift, or when doing the shopping, park at the end of the car park and walk into the shops. Simple things like that can make a big difference. If you have a young family or you have pets or animals, try and spend as much quality time with them outdoors, running around. Kids and animals generally love to play games and play races with everything, so you can always increase your general activity that way. Another good thing to do in terms of structured exercise would be to involve yourself in group activities, whether that's a sport or a walking club or a running club or a bike club or something like that. Often having that social activity is just good for the soul in terms of human beings connecting, but it often provides extra motivation and accountability. And often people can end up having a lot of fun whilst they're exercising, which is another good distraction. So it's a bit of a win-win.
Yeah, and now let's go a little further. We're driving into the car park at our local supermarket. What should we not be putting in our trolleys?
Again, try and keep things simple here, because there's lots of things we should and shouldn't. But if you try and think about it in terms of low HI or low human intervention. So when we're selecting foods, try and select foods that look like they did naturally. Try and stay away from highly processed goods. You know, fruits and vegetables in their natural forms, some good quality meats. Again, keeping it simple with that focus of low human intervention. That's probably the best, simplest strategy to take on board, I think, this summer. Again, combine that with lots of water, and I think you're well on your way to losing those extra kilos, finding the hidden six-pack and getting rid of the
touch-off. and lots of walking's good as well, isn't it? Doing some really long sort of walks, 7 or 8 Ks.
In fact, there's a lot of research now suggesting that it's not all about crazy exercise in one stint. The key is to inject
small amounts of just general activity more often throughout the day. So walking is fabulous, whether it's one big chunk or whether it's even 10-minute spurts throughout the day. Just trying to do a little bit more here and there is very, very important. It makes you feel good, clears your head, and great for weight loss and great for general health.
Thanks very much, Sean. Sean Cardillo there from the new You Total Health, and looking healthy this summer. For more details, jump onto mindfood.com. And that brings to an end our program today. Well, it's been quite a journey from celiac disease.
I think you had a little crush on Sally Cooper, the violinist.
Sally I reckon, could hang out and have a really good time.
There was a lot of giggling going on.
I know. She's good with the violin, and I thought...
And I was like, excuse me.
I'm in the middle of a Diana Ross situation, a chain reaction.
I tell you, there was too much giggling with that.
I noticed you didn't talk very much, but then again, you were...
I couldn't get a
word. Trying to get those blood oranges.
I tell you what, though, we've really got to get in behind that Oz Sober. Are you going to give up alcohol for October?
Yes, of course I will. I don't drink very much at all anyway. It takes one to know one. So I'll do that for you. And of course, for more details on anything you heard on today's program, jump on to mindfood.com. Until next week, see you later.
Have a good weekend.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick K. Roos. Bogart Torelli speaking.